suggested that given it's just two, but you can decide in which order you want to proceed in this regard. There are tea and coffee outside, but we can all just quietly go and come back. We can have a working breakfast. It was a bit late, but it's fine. We don't mind that. But this room, different than the ones that we usually use, but please indicate by hand if you, for those who do not have the speaker in front of them, if you wish to speak. Otherwise, we are ready to go. So, Jas, thank you very much. I hand over to you.
Yes, thank you, Chair. It's always an honor to be here. Thank you for welcoming us. Before I say anything, I think my colleagues must just each introduce themselves, and then I will let you know how it's going to happen from our side. I'm starting with right next to me.
Good morning, Honourable Chair. My name is Vic Mercer. I'm the CEO of the Judicial Inspectors.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and members. I'm Leonard De Souza. I'm the Head of Inspections and Investigations for Judicial Inspectorate.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and members, invited guests. My name is Miranju Kibido and I'm the Deputy Director of Communications for JICS.
Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Emmanuel Sibuni Lekhulisa. I'm the National Manager of Finance for JICS.
Morning, Chair and Members. My name is Professor Mutlava. I'm the Manager for the Mandatory Reporting Unit.
Morning, Chair. Morning, all. My name is Musa Alassil. I'm the Personal Assistant Judge. Thank you.
I think that's the delegation from JICS. We thank you. I think we might as well go around. Then everybody knows who's in the room. It's just very quick. I think I want to welcome Advocate Malautsi, the member of the EFF, you know, member of this committee. Welcome, sir, to you. I did give you apology that you'll be slightly late. You came in as we expected. Thanks. You can proceed, Commissioner, to introduce yourself.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable Members. I'm Mandla Mkavela, the Chief Operations Commissioner of DCF.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. Nzuki Sindaka is the name, advisor to Deputy Minister Correctional Services.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Kaya Sobeza. I'm the head of office at the Office of the Deputy Minister of Correctional Services. Thank you.
Morning, Chair and honorable members. Carol Mogu from the Office of the Minister's Special Advisor.
Must we also introduce ourselves again? No, they also, they're going incognito. Yeah, okay. Werner Horn, member of the committee from the Democratic Alliance.
Thank you, Chairperson. Tribal Mrauzi, a member of EFF, member of the committee.
I am Paul Angola, a member of the committee, representing the African National Congress.
Namaste, Mbamaseko Jele, member of the committee, representing ANC.
Thank you very much, Judge. We can proceed.
Yes, thank you, Chair. What I intend doing is, as briefly as possible, give background and an introduction. Some of these issues that I will mention appear in the report. Some, the start of the history is in this report, and some things have happened in the meantime, because the report is about the year 2018-2019 and therefore ending in March 2019. So some of the things that are mentioned in the report have been developing since then. Perhaps something which we will all agree but not always act according to is that, in my view and in the view of this organization, the institution, the Judicial Inspectorate, or JIS, is of extreme importance in our constitutional democracy. The Constitution guarantees the rights of people in custody, detained people, but the Constitution also refers to international law, and in that regard, the norms of international law, the provisions of the optional protocol against torture, OPCAT, the Mandela rules, and all of those things come into the picture, whether or not they are technically part of our law at the moment. This is obvious, for this JIX needs a degree of independence. I will come back to that. The Judicial Services Act 111 of 1998 says JIX is an independent office under the control of the inspecting judge. I will later come to independence, a little bit later, but the point I would like to make now, and I make this to everyone, myself, my organization, everybody who works with us, the public at large, and I've made it at universities and elsewhere, not only with regard to JIX, we must be careful of lip service. It is easy to say, oh, let's skip the point of independence because we all agree on it. We may agree vaguely on the concept of independence. Nobody who's sitting in this room would say, I do not think JIX should be independent, or I do not think the South African Constitution is law, or I do not think human rights is a valid concept, or I am against democracy. Just like no person would put up her or his hand and say, I am a racist. However, to simply say, I'm not a racist, I believe in democracy and I believe in independence is not enough. We have to measure it against the conduct. So there was a meeting last week between myself, Deputy Minister Holomisa, National Commissioner Fraser. As far as I understood that meeting, the Deputy Minister indicated that he would not be present today and asked National Commissioner to be present. I see there are representatives of the Department of Correctional Services. From the side of JIX, we always welcome anybody who has anything to do with it. We don't want any situation where we talk behind each other's backs, etc. Nothing I say here or anywhere else is secret. And this brings me to a small point, Chair. I assume the proceedings are recorded. I hope so, because I have no problem myself with the media being present or anybody else. But I ask everybody, please, for accuracy. After we appeared here, I think it was the 3rd of September, early September, when I walked out, a representative of the ministry asked me to respond to an inquiry, I think from the media, as to what I meant when I said senior DCS officials are sabotaging JIX. And my answer was simply, I never said it. So I would like to caution us all against inaccuracy. I might have spoken, like I will do today, about frustrations, but a word such as sabotage I certainly never used and do not intend using. And if I used it, it is like the old Chris Christopherson song, the silver-tongued devil was sitting on my shoulder and speaking things that I was not aware of. So thank you very much for that. We are here with the annual report, which I believe you have, plus the quarterly report. I will leave it to the CEO and colleagues to highlight what needs to be highlighted there and to answer questions. I would like to thank everybody in JICS, and there are too many to thank to mention here in person, for putting together the annual report. The photograph on the front was taken by myself with a cell phone in Polesware. I don't know, do we have it here? And who's? Do we have our, we don't have our front page. Anyway, they have it there. A part of it, of course, was cut off. This is a photograph of officials from behind. And then there is a photograph a little bit later, which is basically all in orange. you don't have to... that was also taken by myself on a cell phone in the so-called Bliktronk, the corrugated iron facility. Yeah, the corrugated iron facility near Voorwerk. Yeah. The fitness of the official on the left is visible. and the curiosity of the inmate on the right. Whenever I take these photographs, we try to be careful not to have people's faces, because for faces to be photographed, we need the written permission of the inmates. Sometimes they are very willing to give it, sometimes not, but we avoid all kinds of forms having to be filled in, etc. I think, Chair, if you look at the annual report, and otherwise, I think over the past 3.5 years, I was appointed from 1 April 2016. I think I, at the risk of sounding immodest, I think we have made very much progress. The JICS I inherited had an acting CEO for years, no judge for quite a number of months, and the morale was very low. Officials were doing their work, but they had an attitude that JICS was not taken seriously. And they also had were of the view that obstacles are placed in the or were placed in the way of JICS by the Department of Correctional Services. I was encouraged by previous Deputy Minister Tabang Makwetla specifically to let JICS have what he called a higher public profile. There were newspaper articles at the time by previous Minister Masuta and others, and we worked on that higher public profile, and that is why we have Ms. Emarentia Cupido here, our media person, and our profile is certainly higher. Whether that is welcomed or not by the department or anybody else, I am not quite sure at this stage. The previous deputy minister did encourage us, but I will come back to that point. So the point there is not to make Van der Westhuizen famous or miss her, but it is to make our public aware of the importance of looking after the dignity of inmates. For our constitutional democracy, it is of course extremely important that the safety and security of the public must be protected by the government. Therefore, criminals must be punished. Therefore, the best punishment we know of, for in certain cases, would be imprisonment. But that does not mean that people relinquish their right to human dignity once they are incarcerated. In fact, the state becomes responsible for them and has to look after them. So that is what the higher public profile is about. Let me move quickly to the order is a bit different. I will now say something about JICS independence, but it links up to some care gender justice. As we said before at this committee, the Correctional Services Act says JICS is an independent office. The question is, what does it mean? Obviously, the inspecting judge is not the Chief Justice in the Constitutional Court, where I said before, there are different levels of independence. And we can distinguish between independence as an approach, as a mindset, and independence in terms of resources. So everyone has to be accountable to someone. The Chief Justice does not generate and pay his own salary. He gets it from somewhere. He has to pay tax. And the Office of the Chief Justice has to account for how they spend money. Certainly the same applies to JICS. litigation then happened. It started late in 2016, early 2017. Parties started to get together. The NGO Sonke Gender Justice took the Correctional Services Act to court. JICS is created by and regulated in chapters 9 and 10 of the Correctional Services Act. That is our home. That is where we live. The Sonke Gender Justice said that whole approach is wrong, and they wanted those chapters to be declared unconstitutional. As an alternative, they wanted certain specific clauses to be declared unconstitutional because it violated the independence of JICS. I don't want to spend more time. We can talk about it, what the line of argument was. All the respondents, the President of the Republic of South Africa was respondent to one, the Minister of Justice respondent two, the National Commissioner of Correctional Services number three, I as the inspecting judge was respondent number four, and at the later stage they added the Public Service and Treasury. A day or two after I last saw you here, Chair, the Western Cape High Court gave its judgment, and it found certain clauses of the Correctional Services Act to be unconstitutional and therefore invalid. I explained before what the problem is. Section 85 says the JICS is an independent office under the control of the inspecting judge. We don't know exactly what independence means, and we especially do not know what control means. Then Section 88, capital A, says the inspecting judge identifies a person whom the national commissioner must then appoint as the CEO. That was one of the arguments of Sonke. The court, rightfully in my view, rejected that argument. That does not affect JICS's independence because the National Commissioner must appoint the person identified by the judge. However, the problem then is Section 88A places the accountability of the CEO under the National Commissioner of Correctional Services for administration and for money. But in that same clause, it again states that the CEO acts under the control of the inspecting judge. So whilst under the control of the inspecting judge, the CEO must report to the National Commissioner. The complaints about the CEO or staff must be referred by the inspecting judge to the National Commissioner, which has happened, and if you're interested in that part, I will talk about it. Then, of course, Section 91 specifically deals with financial matters. So the court found Section 91 to be constitutionally invalid and part of Section 88A. The court gave government... Well, the court suspended the Declaration of Independence. In other words, these clauses at the moment are still in operation. But the court gave government, or parliament specifically, 24 months to remedy the defects. That 24 months started running on the 5th or whatever it was, 5th or the 6th of September. However, the judgment has to be confirmed by the Constitutional Court. I was told a week ago that the National Commissioner, Respondent 3, does not intend to appeal. I don't know if the Presidency or the Ministry appealed or not, but in any event, it has to be confirmed by the Constitutional Court. If the Constitutional Court sets aside the judgment, then we are back to square one to some extent. If the Constitutional Court confirms it, the 24 months would probably start running on the date of the Constitutional Court order, I'm not sure. But as we sit here, where are we now? Just more than a month of the 24 months has already expired.
as per the order of the Western Cape High Court. This brings us now to the question, what is the way forward? I wrote a proposal to the Minister, Deputy Minister, National Commissioner, and this committee, the chair on this committee, regarding the way forward. I don't know whether it's reached you. Firstly, as you know, there is a so-called business case which has been with the ministry for quite a few months about an appropriate form, government form for JICs. Should JICs be, at the moment JICs are, I think it is called a program inside correctional services. Western Cape High Court said it is, JICs is very important, the court said. I must blow our bugle here at least. The judge said JICs is very important in our constitutional democracy. And the problem, of course, with these clauses is JICs, just to a large extent operationally, financially, etc., is placed under the control of the very department they are supposed to oversee. I can perhaps just slip in here with congratulations to my colleague, Mr. Chalisa, who is here, and his team. JICS received a wonderful report from the Auditor General. There were two small so-called exceptions. One had to do with the engine numbers or registration numbers of JICS vehicles, and the other one had to do about depreciation of furniture that JICS bought from Polsmoor, in other words, from the Department of Correctional Services. There are even differences of opinion between the Auditor General and the Department and Treasury, etc. But there was nothing in it about unauthorized expenditure or self-enrichment or corruption or nothing like that. Of course, the Department of Correctional Services has an infinitely larger budget, and I am not sure what their report was. But the idea was from the court that it impacts or potentially impacts on the independence of JICS. For example, DCS could interfere in the JICS budget. At a meeting a short while ago, a national commissioner indicated that that was impossible because the JICS budget is ring-fenced. Whatever ring-fenced may mean, and I'm not disagreeing with the commissioner, but we have told you here before that that interference has taken place in the past. For example, when all government departments have to cut budgets 2.5% across the board, perhaps as a result of the president's previous president's announcement about university funding, then of course JICS accepts that it has to cut 2.5% like everybody else. But when the chief financial officer of JICS then says, we tell you where in your budget you must cut it, it becomes a problem. And that did happen. We were told that we cannot cut it from our salary, the salary part of our job. If we want to say we can do without a secretary or two or three secretaries for a year, we were told you have to cut it from your goods and services for operational budget. That means from the petrol for your vehicles to visit prisons. So, Chair, please understand, when we raise these things, the court and I, we are not talking about any specific individuals who happen to be in office at this time. Not me, not the commissioner, not the present minister or deputy minister. We are also talking about our constitution 10 years and 20 years from now, and we don't even know who is going to be in these positions. So that would be one of the implications. Now, regarding the way forward, I wrote this document, as I said. The business case must go forward to find the appropriate form for JICS. And now it is very clear, it was not always so clear, but now it is very clear that the Correctional Services Act has to be amended. We cannot say in the business case, we are an independent government component, situated within Treasury or within the Justice Department or within the Department of Public Administration, and then at the same time say still that the CEO has to report to the National Commissioner. So there, to be brief, this was also discussed at a meeting, the meeting I told you of last Thursday, between Deputy Minister, National Commissioner, myself and some staff members. The choice is, does one amend the specific clauses as they are and try to tinker them with them and make them put them in line with the judgment? Or does one go wider and draft new legislation for JICS outside the Correctional Services Act? A range of other issues have been mentioned over the years about independence, the powers of JICS, the functions of JICS. There are all kinds of little discrepancies with regard to mandatory reporting, etc. Some of them are big questions. Some of them are more technical and perhaps sloppy drafting. I understood from the National Commissioner that they are also considering wider amendments to the Correctional Services Act. But if we have to choose, amend these clauses and leave them where they are, or lift them out altogether and give JICS its own separate legislation, the consensus so far, also from this meeting with Deputy Minister and National Commissioner, seems to be that JICS should have its own legislation. At the previous meeting here, I said that we are busy with the draft and that I have it in my bag. I still have it in my bag, and I'm not going to give it to you today, but we can try to give it, to make it available, our modest proposal within, let's say, before the middle of November, let's say within a month, because what I proposed in our, to the Ministry and to the National Commissioner and all the others, in fact, who were implicated in the Sonke judgment, is that JICS will drive this process, but in coordination and cooperation with all stakeholders. That is our proposal. Right, next one then. Let me just go to the special ones before the thematic ones. I will be very brief here. The Correctional Services Act says the judge must report on every inspection to the Minister and to Parliament. For practical reasons, we have been putting these every inspections together in quarterly reports, and that's what we have here today, because it will keep you all very busy if we report on every inspection separately. However, in some special cases, we do report on specific things. And the one was Goedemut, which you have there in the middle. As you know, on 29 March, a murder of an official took place when she was stabbed in the neck with the scissors by an inmate. This same inmate raped her colleague. There was a hostage drama. I don't want to repeat all the facts. I visited the place in April together with the previous deputy minister, expressed condolences to the family and so on. I heard some disturbing things at that stage from our investigators on the ground, and we investigated. I did return, together with Human Rights Commission, Commissioner Chris Nissen. We returned to Goedemut in June. There was some attempt from the department via the deputy minister to stop us from going there. I expressed my dissatisfaction with that attempt, and we went anyway. The situation was very tense, but we were received cordially. The regional commissioner was there. We interviewed inmates, not only of what happened on that day, but also what happened since then, because the center was placed under lockdown. And JICS received several complaints of assault and torture, etc. A few days later, I met with the National Commissioner, who explained why he thought we should not go there at that stage, and I very much appreciated the explanation, and I want to make that very clear, whereas I did not appreciate the initial message, do not go there. I did appreciate the confidence between us at that stage, where he explained to me that there might be, that their investigations indicate that there might be something more to it than, as we thought at that stage, the violation of the dignity of an inmate, etc. So we changed, or we repeated, we went back on our investigation, sent our inspectors and investigators again, and came to a conclusion similar to what National Commissioner indicated to me. However, we've never received the report from the Department of Correctional Services. So, Ms. Cupido has all the dates here if it's necessary. At some point then, we had our report ready and to send to the Ministry, etc., and Parliament. And I asked the National Commissioner to give me some insight into the their report for the very reason that we did not want to firstly make fools of ourselves, but also contradict each other in public. Then we did not get, at some point I got a reply saying the report is being finalized and will be made available to us as soon as possible, but as I sit here, I have not seen the DCS report. We sent our report plus an executive summary to Minister, Deputy Minister, National Commissioner, and this committee. In the cover letter to that report, we said we intend releasing a media statement a few days later. We specifically invited stakeholders to indicate to us if there are factual mistakes. We did not receive any feedback. We released the media report to the best of our ability. In the media report, we omitted names, etc. And then I was later on informed that Correctional Services, or the commissioner, was unhappy because he only saw the report in the media. Our information here indicates that there was no reason to see the report only in the media. It was sent well in advance to all relevant parties. We were also told that parts of our report now jeopardizes their investigation. I will come back to this point later about cooperation, but all I can say on Goedemoed, we specifically stated in our report and in our media release that to the extent that some questions are unanswered, our report is preliminary, and we will re-look at it as soon as we have the report of Correctional Services. St. Albans, we did not report now on any specific incident, but in this committee specifically, the conditions there were mentioned before. Also with Commissioner Chris Nissen, we visited St. Albans. We drafted a report on the conditions, which are quite sterile. We sent it to this committee and Minister, Deputy Minister, and National Commissioner. And we last time included a preliminary report on then a death that occurred actually after the previous events. By the way, just one small thing about Goedemoed. A very disturbing feature of the Goedemoed one is around about the 3rd of August, our Cape Town office received a complaint from an inmate in Goedemoed. And the complaint is that he was assaulted by the area commissioner in front of the nurse and another senior official for, quote unquote, spreading lies to the inspecting judge. So the complaint is that the inmate was assaulted because he spoke to the inspecting judge. The further implication is that they heard what he said to the inspecting judge because they would not otherwise know whether it's a lie or not. Of course, we are experienced enough not to believe anything we hear from an inmate immediately. So A day or two later, I think it was 5 August, our office sent to the regional commissioner and several other senior officials, notified them of this complaint, and asked DCS for a response. We asked them to acknowledge receipt within a day and to come back with a response before the end of August. On 21 August, we received an acknowledgement that DCS had received our communication. And to the best of my knowledge, up to now, we have not received any feedback, am I correct, on whether there might be any truth or whether it is a complete lie. So that one hangs in the air, Chair. And I say very clearly that I certainly do not believe an inmate just on the face of what he says. But should that be true in theory, that goes absolutely to the very heart of the mandate of JIGS. And it would have been very helpful if we could sit here today and say, DCS furnished us with a report and we are satisfied that this did not happen at all. But so far we have not received it. About thematic reports, I won't say much now. As I said, we don't report on every inspection. We do, but in the way of quarterly reports. However, we have identified themes, and our counterparts in England do the same, that repeatedly occur. So overcrowding would be a theme. The state of facilities would be a theme. The concept of supermax facilities, of which we have one at Ebongweni near Kokstad, would be a theme. Overcrowding, very briefly, I was asked a week ago by the Deputy Minister, whose fault is it? Mr. Minister will give you figures. I made it very clear, it is not the fault of the National Commissioner or the Department of Correctional Services. They don't invite these people as guests. They are sent there by courts, and they are kept there, and it is a problem dumped upon DCS, the massive overcrowding. Who is to blame? I don't have a single answer. It is a systemic problem. Of course, the crime level is to blame. You can go back there and say the churches and the schools did not do their work, or you can say poverty is at the heart of all South Africa's problems, or whatever, but we have too much crime. That's number one. And I don't know, in this capacity, as a thinker, and I can sit and think up many reasons why this happens, but not as the inspecting judge. Then secondly, there is a problem when the police arrest people and whether magistrates should grant bail or not. Magistrates should grant bail, but you must not underestimate the complexity of their task. It is a huge responsibility to grant bail to a serial killer because you don't know that he's up on other charges would be disastrous. So the magistrates have to rely on information from the public prosecutors and the police. And the magistrates, from what I've heard, are struggling with this. So they are trying to work out their own side of guidelines, some of them, some are more active than others, on how to grant bail. The next level would be, do people have money for the bail? We see people who have been incarcerated for 9 months because they say they cannot afford the 200 rand bail. That one also has variations. Are people too poor to be able to pay bail, or do their families not want to assist them because the family themselves think that it is better that this one be locked up than to come home? We hear anecdotes about that. Then, of course, it goes to the next level. Should courts give other sentences than imprisonment? I have said here and at overseas conferences, it is not simple to say give shorter sentences, because a short sentence is the worst possible thing for our situation. If somebody is in prison for a few weeks or a few months, it is very unlikely, there's a slight possibility that he would be scared and not commit something again. But there is also a very strong likelihood that he would simply become a gang member with a tattoo on his arm, which will seriously jeopardize his possibilities, his ability to find a job afterwards, so that he would be drawn into crime for a lifetime. Then, of course, the last part of the overcrowding problem is parole. Why does it take so long? Recently, I heard at a facility in Krugersdorp that parole board chairs want documentation such as the original judgment, the original police SAP 69, the previous convictions, etc., and that all of those things are very difficult to be found. I don't know where to find them, but this deserves serious attention. And the very last part goes back to the community. We have heard anecdotal evidence from places like Toyandu that community chiefs, leaders, do not want what they call criminals back in their village. Even when the mother says, I will take my son, he has served 20 years now, I will look after him, that they are told, then you move to another village. So our answer here would be, overcrowding really deserves a multifaceted initiative. It is not the fault of the correctional services. It's also certainly not the fault of DCS, of JICS. Recently, we were sometimes confronted with, why is it overcrowded, as if it is our fault, or as if I must pull a solution out of the bag. In order to provide a little more clarity, we did an overcrowding survey. It's there mentioned right at the top. We decided to take, five centers in different areas of the country and to do a physical test by asking a number of people, why are they there, how long have they been there, etc., etc. This was a little bit unfortunate. We did it very properly. We, to the best of our ability, we released it as a more lengthy media release. In my view, it supported DCS. It did not attack DCS. It actually indicated that their job is difficult. But our media officer was contacted by a senior media person of DCS, and we were accused of trying to make ourselves the alternative spokesperson for correctional services instead of their department. I reported that to the national commissioner by way of a WhatsApp message, and I have not heard anything since. the Supermax report and the state of facilities, we hope to have available by the end of November or before the end of November, because these two reports raise very serious questions. The state of facilities, allegations of corruption, allegations of a breakdown between DCS and public works, etc. We do not have the answers at the moment, but we have a set of pictures which will spoil your lunch, like it did before when I showed some of them here, about what some facilities look like. Some facilities, Chair, to be fair, look very good. Some can be compared with the best in the world. Some look very, very bad. Some look good, but operate badly. For example, where a pump system is so sophisticated that engineers cannot repair it and therefore inmates do not have hot water. The issue of Supermax Ebongweni being lawful or unlawful, we will report to you during November. There are ongoing investigations, for example, mentally ill inmates, death in correctional services, etc. Then if we go on to mandatory reporting, let me first finish that before I come back to the relationship. Mr. Misser will talk to you about that. The Act says that certain things must be reported regardless whether JICS know about it, death, use of force, etc. We have reported here before that the system of automatic reporting had collapsed. From documentation between the Deputy Minister and the National Commissioner, which the Deputy Minister made available to me, It looks like the implication is that we at DICS want to rely on old-fashioned methods of reporting. I do not think that is correct. We have complained a number of times that the system collapsed, that we cannot repair it, and that in the meantime we have agreed on manual reporting, which does or does not happen. I do not have the figures with me right here. Now, Chair, regarding relationship with DICS and with the Ministry, and I'm finished by now, let me first say, after I said all these things, I must tell you that I don't know in which capacity I'm saying it. My term as the inspecting judge expired the last day of September. I was in touch, I indicated to the previous ministry my availability, should they consider it useful for me to continue, especially in view of the independence initiative and the legislation that must be drafted, etc. Between May and today, we have often, and we have the dates here, try to meet with the ministry. I had two meetings with the deputy minister, and one on the 28th of August, if I remember correctly, with the minister. We repeatedly pointed out that by 1 October, DICS would be without a judge. It has happened in the past, and that is the time when DICS fell into serious depression because of the fact that they were under the control of nobody in terms of the Act. On the last day of my term, I received an email from the minister's advisor, I think, who is present here. And the email said, the minister has extended or is extending your contract until 31 December. And then it said, but the presidency has not confirmed it yet. The Act says the president appoints the inspecting judge. My previous appointment, I received by way of minutes from the cabinet meetings or from the president. It's called president's minutes or something like that. So this is all I have. I officially, although I read things in the newspaper, but officially I don't know what's happening after 31 December. But more seriously, quite frankly, the minister cannot extend the contract, it's the president. And whereas I appreciate very much the clarity that the ministry tried to give us on the last day of my term, if it is not confirmed by the president, or if the appointment of anybody else is not confirmed by the president, I'm not sure that I'm the inspecting judge as I sit here today. But be that as it may, last week, deputy minister asked me to continue and to do all the work to the best of my ability. And I will do so because, as I said in a different television program a week or two ago, apart from my own immediate family, our constitutional democracy is the most important thing in my life. Chair, our situation has been a bit more complex since the change in administration. Perhaps the difference was when I was appointed, the minister and deputy minister previously were there before me, and they gave me valuable information. I understand that a new ministry has to do much to get going on many different fronts, and I certainly am not saying that DICS is the most important thing that should be occupying them. But perhaps my sense is, and perhaps I'm wrong, that our relationship with correctional services is a bit different since the change in ministry. It would seem that correctional services are concerned about our public profile, that correctional services do not always like it when we issue media statements, even though we give them advance of these statements ahead of time. I've mentioned the example that Ms. Cupido was accused of wanting to become an alternative voice for correctional services. We have been told from time to time that we must be careful, because if DCS tells us what they tells this committee, and they are here today, so they are free to tell the committee, but if DCS tells this committee what really went on with Kurumut or wherever else, Jigs will be embarrassed. I've tried not to interpret that as a threat to Jigs, but we don't want to be embarrassed. And apart from that, we regardless embarrassment, we want to be correct and true, truthful to the ministry, the public, parliament. So in order not to embarrass ourselves or anybody else, we need assistance from DCS. If we say to DCS, this is our preliminary report, but you guys have much more potential to know the truth, and please help us, we cannot then wait forever. Because it would seem that delay is either a tactic or a necessary result of operational failures. I've mentioned one example. There are several. Delays where we ask for information to help us to be accurate. Some of my people speculate that the very low profile, the moving under the radar that Jigs had before over years was preferable, is preferable to whoever. It was not the preferred choice of, for example, Chief previous Deputy Minister, who specifically asked us. So we need help. National Commissioner proposed to me that we sit and draft a protocol of our cooperation, especially to compare and coordinate reports and media summaries so that we do not embarrass each other. Ms. Cupido was present. I committed to it. That was early July. I wrote to the National Commissioner to say we are ready to sit down and to form team to this. And we have not, except a week ago at the meeting, we have heard nothing since then. I would be very happy speaking for myself and for what it may be worth, given my time period, which I quite frankly am not sure what it is. I would be quite happy to draft a protocol, but we cannot be censored by DCS. National Commissioner and senior officials will say this is not at all their purpose, but the independence of DCS for us is of the utmost importance. Again, independence within necessary limits. We do not want slush funds. We do not want funds to send the judge to Mauritius to relax. We will duly report, as Mr. Chalisa and the CEO have been doing. But we do need cooperation, and we want to be able to say to all relevant parties what we find. I have tried very hard to do this in a diplomatic way in order to avoid embarrassment, but we do need cooperation. Chair, I really seriously apologize for speaking so long. I will wait until question time. The CEO, you can decide how to handle it, whether the CEO immediately proceeds with the two reports or whether you... I think we must not draw the attention away from the reports, but it is entirely up to you. Thank you very, very much for your attention.
No, thank you very much, Judge, for that quite detailed perspective of where you find Jigs at the moment. Collins, what we will do, I will make a few remarks on what the judge has said, perhaps, and we will then go to the report, and then Collins, members can then ask questions both on what the judge said as well as the report. Is that okay?
Yes, sir.
that we proceed in that way. Now, Judge, you before we proceed to the annual report, it's clear there's a number of areas or issues you raise which are fundamental to the cooperative governance, and in particular when it comes to mandate of JICS. And mine is just a few remarks towards it, which will be followed through to the relevant parties from the committee, based on the information you have given. We all know that Section 12 of our Constitution guarantees the freedom and security of a person. Very specifically outlined there. Now, we also know that JICS by design is not an exclusive model of total independence, which you acknowledge. In its current design, it's rather a cooperative governance model, within correctional services. But there are fundamentals, as you pointed out, in terms of independence and taking our latest judgment into account. We also know that design is almost an inherent inbuilt tension, a positive tension, if I can use that there will always be. Because the mere by function in operation, the one inspector, right, until full transformation is achieved, of course, in terms of best practices worldwide and in our democracy, such as ours. Thirdly, I want to point out that the areas you've highlighted in terms of the Songfi judgment, of course, we will be ready once the litigation process is completed with the Constitutional Court. And then as we do on a daily basis, our committee gets activated by the Speaker's office. Of course, we would be interested as a committee, and after we will be discussing with the executive the area about the options in terms of the expected amendments when so formally activated after the court judgments have been completed, or whether to give JICS its own legislation to that effect. That's another area we as a committee will naturally, in the course of our work, engage with the executive to that effect. Now, I want to say this, perhaps it might be helpful. We are aware of the austerity measures pronounced 2 years ago by the Treasury and Cabinet. And all, as you pointed out, all government departments were asked to give effect to it, and all entities, for that matter, were also affected. But there is also an important directive by the Treasury that is worthwhile checking. Now, I don't have the correct wording now, if my memory collects. That the Treasury is the one that gives guidance as to where you can cut, and what are the areas in terms of the budget framework. Now, as you know, there are compensation of employees as an item, there's goods and services as an item, and other expenditures. We must just check. It may not be, and I don't know in this case, it may not be DCS that decided where you can and where you can't. They may simply be following the Treasury directive. It could be Treasury that said the cutting can must be goods and services, which affects your operations. And I'm reflecting on the courts, for example, exactly the same thing. The OCJ experienced the same in the high courts. They wanted to not touch because they are human resource driven, like you hear around inspectors, the clerk of the court is critical in a court or an interpreter, as opposed to a financial system operating in the back room. So hence, they were more implied to continue with the human resource. But that's where the director was, or possibly is. We will look at the Goedemoed. Thank you for that information. When the committee, I think, is it this afternoon that DCS is here? Next week. So we will engage with them on that particular report itself. Lastly, I just want to point out that I'm sure with regard to a relationship, I'm sure the minister is very much aware that the president appoints the inspecting judge. And I'm sure that was a process that was discussed, as I'm sure, we're hoping that matter is finalized in soonest. I'm talking about the extension part, the legal extension part of the contract. We know in other judgments, as you know, in the latest legislation, which is on the table to amend based on the Constitutional Court judgment in terms of the NPA, the court preferred that there should not be extensions. There should be appointments at all times. In the case of, we were asked to amend, for example, the NPA Act in relation to the Deputy Director of Prosecutions. You all recall that judgment. The court very explicitly pointed out that the legislation should be very clear in that regard. But that is just a comment from my side. And then lastly, we do support a protocol when it comes to communication. Sometimes over-communication is a bad thing, as you would probably have discovered by now. You stay in the media, you die in the media, somebody told me. So a good thing requires balance, as you would agree, on both sides. And there will always be underlying tension in this regard. But we're learning. Is a democracy. He's only 25 years down the line. Others were 50 years, like India, and others are still learning too from us and vice versa. If you take our brief relationship as far as justice and constitutional development is concerned. So we are very conversant that we would support such a protocol because it shows a direction in terms of cooperation. Having said those few remarks, I think my colleagues, I'm sure, will add when we come to the question time. So let's proceed with the annual report presentation, and then thereafter we will debate all of the matters. Thank you.
Yeah, sorry, Chair, can I just I have no comment on the extension and appointment issue.
Yeah.
On the protocol, I've stated our view. The budget cut, the budget direction, whether it came from Treasury or not, I do not know. But what I do want you to know, because it came even from, I think perhaps before the CEO was appointed, on a Friday afternoon we were notified that there was a 27% cut to our budget, not 2.5%. Mr. Chalisa was around. Correct me when I'm wrong. The next week we were informed that it was a mistake, an error. We had a meeting with the minister, where minister for a considerable time virtually cross-examined the chief financial officer as to how this happened, to the extent that I later tried to help the CEO. I'm not the CEO, the chief financial officer. Promises were made. However, minister kept on asking them, but is there not something you can do about this? And eventually there was a second meeting where minister again deeply questioned the CFO, this time via phone. I think we were on speakerphone, if I'm correct. The CFO was not there. So if it was simply a matter of saying, sorry guys, there's nothing we can do about it, here is the Treasury directive, then I cannot personally recall why all those long discussions were necessary. Thank you. But I'm sure our team had more information on that. But it's not necessary to argue there who was right and who was wrong, because all that is perhaps an example
of the kind of thing that the court had in mind when it found Section 91 of the Correctional Services Act to be unconstitutional. If we cannot interfere with your judgment, with your budget, is the answer, then that means that the court was wrong. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mises.
Good morning. Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members and colleagues. I'm here to present to you the 2018-2019 Annual Report for the Judicial Inspectorate for Correctional Services. I will be starting on slide 8, which covers our vision, mission, values. I think these are all contained in our annual report on page 18 and page 19. But what is of interest here is of the issue of OPCAS and us being part of the National Preventative Mechanism, which has been ratified by South Africa most recently earlier this year. Judge serves as a member of the National Preventative Mechanism, which is housed and chaired by the Human Rights Commission. So this is of interesting note that JICS plays an active role when it comes to this international instruments, which in relevance of OPCAS, the international protocols. Slide 9, this gives you a high-level organizational structure of the organization, JICS, specifically contained on our page 20 in our annual report. But what is of interest here is that you'll see that we have three directors, of which from August this year we're still waiting for DCS to release a simple parcel function in order for me to effect an appointment. Now, this is so frustrating that I need to effect an appointment since August this year to date. In fact, this started earlier April. To date, I'm still waiting. We are dependent on DCS to release parcel functions to me in order for me to effect appointments. Now, just to show you one critical area, which is actually corporate services of my organization, which is headed by a director, which I need to fill this post. The process has been concluded. I'm just waiting for the function, which has not been issued or released to me yet. I need to note this here, because this is really challenging now, and it leaves me with no other options now to tie in with the Sonke judgment and also to seek relief in a high court. Slide 11, this is contained on our page 23, Honourable Chair. If you would note, previous years, the Judicial Inspectorate has been conducting 81 inspections over the performance cycle. Since the 2018 1st April last year to the 30th of March this year, we have now upped this to 122 inspections, meaning that out of 243 centres, Mr. Chair, we have broken the back that we visit 122 now, which is approximately 50%, with a limited number of staff of only 86 people in the organization. Now, this is one area that we've tried to realign ourselves, readjust, so that we could at least break 50% off our back in terms of visiting 243 centers. From 81, we've picked it up to 122 over this performance cycle. This is contained in our page 23 of our annual report, and there's good details there, which I'll unfold shortly. You would notice on slide 12, there we break down each region of how many inspections have been conducted per region, 15 in Gauteng, in the Northern Cape, combined with Free State, which is our central management region, 26 were done and totaling 122 in all. On slide 13, here you would notice that we've also indicated in our annual report the number of overcrowding that remains a very serious concern. And as of 31st March this year, the population stood, and it's also in sync with the Department of Correctional Services, of 162,875 inmates. Mr. Chair, this sentence in offenders is 115,147. The remand detainees is 47,728, which totals up to 162,875. But what is of interest here, and you'll notice later on when I present my first quarter report to you, which is also contained on slide 48 of my presentation, that the incarceration impacts tremendously on foreigners, and which is highlighted in our first quarter report. Foreigners in our incarceration system as of 30th June 2019 is sitting at almost 20,000 inmates, which is 19,470 of them are foreigners. Now, sentenced, Mr. Chair, 10,984 of them are sentenced inmates within our incarcerated systems. And they are dependent on various other factors, like language, assistance in various other factors, which contributes to also an issue to the DCS. On the awaiting trial, Mr. Chair, 8,486 are awaiting trial, which are also foreigners. Now, this is compared with the bed space, which DCS has on their books, of 118,572. It's actually a huge impact, which has also covered the issue of overcrowding. Now, you recall some time ago, I've indicated to this committee that we are now rating centers in three levels and three categories. The first category being a good center, the second category being a satisfactory center, and the third category is being unsatisfactory. And this would be able, this would be easy for us to account to this portfolio so that we could be able to tell you on a quarterly basis how many centers we assessed, how many are good, how many are satisfactory, and how many are unsatisfactory. Let's talk a little bit about these unsatisfactory and why do we classify them as unsatisfactory. Out of the 122 centers that we have inspected over the cycle, 38 of them, we found them to be unsatisfactory, which is contained in our annual report, and from page 26, Mr. Chair, it's there. But just to highlight some of them, why we classify them as unsatisfactory. Their old infrastructure, Judge already alluded to that. The lack of proper maintenance, which is required urgent attention, renovations, maintenance, plumbing systems, water not available, evolution facilities, electricity supplies, and the list goes on. So this is also contained in our annual report, and I leave you to consider and consume that. What is of interest also on slide 14, the healthcare system within the DCS system is satisfactory, meaning that they are providing the adequate healthcare to inmates in terms of the books. But what part of that is worrying us is the state patients. Those that have been declared mentally unstable, Mr. Chair, and we found that 90 of them have been declared state patients. They do not have any form of capacity, but they are within the incarcerated system. This is a huge problem, Mr. Chair, and this we need to actually address not only with DCS, but it is an issue that needs to be escalated either to the portfolio on health. This is a critical issue because lots of our suicides, lots of our assaults, lots of our sexual offences that take place is within this area of some form of mental illness. Now, according to the DCS books, and during the course of our 122 inspections that we've conducted, 2,730 of them have some form of psychosis, some form of mental instability, some form of mental illness, may I say. And they have been classified within the correctional services, and they have been treated for this form of transitions. But if one looks at the 53 in the Northern Management Region, Gauteng has the highest number. 40 of them at Kosi Mampuru, Mr. Chair, out of that 90, are incarcerated in Kosi Mampuru that are totally declared already by court state patients, meaning that they do not have any mental capacity to appear before any court of law. And this is a worrying factor. And you'll see later that these mental patients either commit suicide or that they have been killed by other inmates because of their mental capacity. And it goes on. KZN has 10, Durban houses them, Pietermaritzburg, and also you'll find some of them housed in Umpangeni. Let's look at some of our investigations that we conducted. Mr. Chair, we've done 33 over this performance cycle. It's contained on slide 15, and you'll find it from our annual reports from page 36 going on. We try to get themes to these investigations. Every investigation has some form of theme. And maybe to highlight a few of them, which we picked for you here. The first one that we highlight is a few minutes too late. This one actually occurred at Imbongweni, which is our Supermax Center in Kokstad, on the 16th of February 2019. It's contained on page 48 of our report. Here you find a inmate. He's in the hospital arm of Imbongweni Hospital. It's in the late part of the evening. He's sitting on the edge, on the windowsill, with a self-made rope out of bed sheet hanging to death. And the officials are just too late, 10 minutes too late, to be on the spot, to save this soul. And that's why we say a few minutes too late. He dies. Sexual assault occurred in Durban. It's contained on our page 41. This occurred on the 20th of August, 2018. It was only reported on the 28th of August. Follow-ups was made on the 3rd of September. DCS actually took the appropriate actions in this instance, and the inmate was disciplined accordingly. This one was a sexual assault, you know. Give me a cigarette, I want other favors. That's contained in the report. This one is of interest, page 39. I hope you read it. It's a mental ill inmate, Mr. Chair, alone and out of control. He's left all alone. He's a mental inmate, and he's out of control. And this was actually a remand detainee, which occurred on the 18th of May, 2018. No medication was provided to this inmate for his condition. He suffered severe assault by other inmates, and he was found dead the next morning. So this is what we pick up during the course of our inspections. And out of these inspections, we then investigate these matters and we generate reports. Another interesting one is a homicide at Boxburg. You don't mess with an official. This is our heading of our report. It's contained on page 50, Mr. Chair. It occurred on the 10th of October, a year ago from now, today, 2018, where an inmate attacked another inmate. This inmate was taken to the office. He was then also tried to attack the officials with a scalp. He ripped his face open. Am I correct? He ripped his face open, ripped the official's face open. They severely beat him up. He was taken to a hospital. He succumbed the next day in hospital. This matter is also under police investigation. We are monitoring this. This matter is monitored by us also, by the police and with NDPP. So, and it goes on. There's another one cited there with the use of force at Mamelodi Bay, and I'll leave it to you to read. It's contained on page 54. On slide 16, Mr. Chair, we cover the issues of complaints that have been done, and I'll show you graphs of how the mandatory reporting system affects JICs, where previously all heads of centres electronically populated these complaints, and also the use of force and the big four, let me say, segregation, death, and also mechanical use of force, and also restraints. But in this instance, 720 complaints were registered from inmates, either from external sources, like the Public Protector, Human Rights Commission, etc., that reports to us. We register these complaints, we look at these complaints, we investigate these complaints, and we categorize them. We have 23 categories of these complaints in our database, but what is of prevalence is assault of officials on inmates. And that you'd find 155 instances that occurred over this period, which was one of the highest at that time. And also, prominently, is transfers, an inmate wanting a transfer from one center to another, and they register these as complaints because they are not being transferred from this center to another. There were 149 instances in that. You might also want to know, inmate-on-inmate assaults. We had 65 instances of those, and those matters were also dealt with by us. Now, the core function of the judicial inspector is contained on slide 17, and which is the mandatory reporting. And here you would find deaths that occur within the incarcerated system. 103 of them, unnatural deaths, in terms of section 15, have been reported to us for this period, which is contained on page 47 of our annual report. But what is of interest, Mr. Chair, if you look at our graph down there, 2016, 2017, 2017, 2018, 2018, 2019, the reporting period, you'll find that there is a drastic increase of deaths. Since this current period to the last period, there have been 21 increase. And the one before that, there have been 30 increase. So from 30 to 82, and then 21 to 103, we can see gradually unnatural deaths within the incarcerated system is increasing. Whilst you'd find natural deaths, on the other hand, is going down because of the provisions of healthcare within the incarcerated system. Let's look a little bit about these unnatural deaths. It's contained on page 18. It's covered on our page 47 in our annual report, and also 48. But what is of interest, Mr. Chair, is suicides amongst the incarcerated system, where unnatural deaths are recorded, 28 cases Majority of them were in Gauteng and followed by KZN thereafter. And you see the graph that depicts them here. We have suicide, the 28, assault inmate on inmate 7, assault official on inmate with 2, and unnatural other as classified by DCS are 58. Let's look at the natural deaths. As I've spoken about now already, from slide 19, it's covered on our page 50 and 51 of our annual report, 384 instances were reported, and you can see there is a gradual decrease, Mr. Chair. That is now an indication that DCS has been providing the necessary health care, and that has been showing some signs of decrease in the natural deaths, in terms of normal heart attacks, etc. Did you know that? What is of interest is on our slide 20, where we give you the analysis of the categories of age. Between the age 35 and 50 is the band where you would find deaths occurring within the incarcerated system. The blue line is the sentenced, and the red line is the remand detainees. And here you'd find that between the ages of 35 and 50, this is the age category that inmates die within the incarcerated system. Let's talk a little bit about segregation. It's contained on page 52 of our annual report. It's on my slide 21. We had registered 1,005 segregations for this period. Mr. Chair, there has been a drastic reduction in this reporting area. If you look at the previous performance cycle, we had registered 9,947, whilst only 1,005 have been reported in this performance cycle. What's the reason for this, one would ask? It is because the non-functioning mandatory reporting system is not working. Heads of centers do not have access to this system, and therefore reporting is actually reduced or non-reporting taking place in some instances. We have approached the National Commissioner. We've put in a manual system. With effect from February this year, a manual reporting system has been put in place. Despite putting in a manual reporting system, reporting is still very, very low. And this is one of the areas in terms of Section 30 that needs to be attended to by DCS in terms of reporting. Slide 22. The use of mechanical restraints is covered on page 53 of our annual report. It's in line with Section 31. Here again, you'd find only 25 instances, Mr. Chair. For the reporting period that has been brought to our attention over the cycle, and if you go over the previous years, from 2015, there were 315, 213, 94. Well, anyway, the system collapsed in 2016, and there you can see the difference. Since the system has not been functioning, there's been very minimal reporting in these four areas, as I'm reporting. Let's go to the next one, use of force. Similar, 232 instances versus 994. Here you'll find this is contained, it's in line with Section 32 of the Correctional Services Act. It's in page 54 of our annual report. But what is of interest and what you'd like to read a little bit further is a case study that we have conducted and investigated. It's on page 54 of our annual report. It's specifically in relation with the use of force. It is in the Mammalsbury Medium A Correctional Center. I'll move to the next directive, which is directed management regions. This is our regional offices throughout the country that manages our ICCB program and also our stakeholders. Here you'd find the number of minimum standards conducted by our ICCB program. We have ICCBs, you're well aware, there are ICCBs throughout the country at all 243 centers that conduct interviews with inmates, registers these complaints, try and resolve them. More especially engages the heads of centers to come to some form of understanding to attend to the complaints. If these complaints are not finalized, it is then referred to the visitors committee. And I'll talk to you about the visitors committee. So there's stats here on 124,758 complaints that have been registered by our ICCB members who have dealt with this internally through the G365 complaints register within all incarcerated centers. These matters are also referred to the Visitors Committee, that's in line with Section 94 of the Correctional Services Act. Unresolved complaints from inmates and with that of the heads of centers is then referred to the Visitors Committee, which is on a quarterly basis, and at that Visitors Center, all stakeholders get together and try and resolve these complaints. If these complaints are not resolved at that level, it is then referred to the inspecting judge for intervention. Our human resources is contained on page 27, Mr. Chair. I've indicated to you, JIGS only has
a complement staff of approximately 83 or 86 people. For this reporting period, we had 80 people that had occupied the positions. Six positions at that time were vacant. When I joined the organization in 2017, we had a vacancy rate of approximately 26 positions. We only have six now that's vacant. I'm waiting for one more position to be released so that I could effect the appointment. DGS needs to release the Pascal function in order for me to effect the appointment of my director, support services, and that's critically important to me. So these positions are all in place. We have 86, two contract judges, one of them, and obviously our media officer is the other one, that's the two. There's our ICCV stats. You can see we have 218 that have been filled, 72 vacant. As I speak to you now, we have broken the back chair. There's already 40 left. We've already advertised that 40. I'll be coming back in the next quarter to report to you on how far we went with this program. When I joined here, the first question that the portfolio asked me, your vacancy rates of the ICCV is too high. What are you doing about it, CEO? And we've now fixed this area. We've had only about 40 that we are now currently recruiting, and we hope that this process will be concluded by December. So immense work has been done in this area. We've rejuvenated this area, I've already accounted to you on this area, and we've brought this in line with the new public service now. The employment equity stats, there you go. On slide 29, you can see the number of African employees. We have 62 of them, coloureds 30, Indians 3, whites only 4, and totals total of 99, including some of the contract employees. Our finances, just covered one very important area. We are within the DCS financials, and we were audited. We were extensively audited, Mr. Chair, by the Auditor General. There were only two exceptions brought against us out of that huge audit that DCS had been given. And maybe just to touch on them, there were minor exceptions, low risks. One, that in our asset register, the vehicles that we purchased, I think 11 of them or 9 of them, instead of putting the registration numbers on our asset register, we put the VIN numbers or the chassis numbers, what you would call, or engine numbers, which are, I think, much more better than the registration number. But the Auditor General wants the registration number, period. So we fixed that. The next one, Mr. Chair, we bought some furniture from Paul's Poor Prison, and there's some depreciation values on furniture. We just didn't indicate the depreciation value on our asset register, and that was also a low risk citation. And those were the only two exceptions, Mr. Chair. Our finances, our budget allocation over this performance cycle, we were allocated 72,341,000. We spent 93% of this budget. We can account for every cent that we spent. The shortfall of the 6% is the current vacancies that we have, and in some areas that we just weren't timeously in terms of our procurement plan to purchase certain goods. But we are fighting on this, and I can guarantee you that in the next performance cycle, we would spend close to our 100% budget. Our expenditure is broken down on the next slide on page 32. You'll find the compensation breaken down, goods, exactly how much we spent, totaling up to 93% of what we spent. We've issued 667 purchase orders, and those are all found in our report. You'll be able to interrogate it there. A little bit on media, media engagements, our networking, our awareness and branding. We've really upped our standards there. We are very popular with the press in terms of listening. Also visual, Judge has appeared many times on television over this quarter. It's all contained in our reports. We've also highlighted them in our courses. We've also released a number of articles on our reports and our investigations. That's also contained, and you can see the media hits that we have. It's contained on page 79 of our annual report, which is covered on slide 35. Challenges, I think we've covered them. It's just the management information systems that's not functioning. One of the questions that was asked by one of the esteemed honorable member last on our profiles in terms of engagement with the public, the website doesn't work. So we are dependent again on DCS. It worked. As we indicated to the Deputy Minister last week, it worked. And then just all of a sudden, it doesn't work. But now we are buried somewhere within DCS's website. So that's the problem. And although we picked this profile up, we gave it a new look, feel, and touch and taste, Mr. Chair. It looks wonderful, but I guess you don't even have access to it. You can't even get to it. So this is a huge challenge for us. And this is tying up also with the areas of our business case and independence. And that ties up with the management information systems. That's the reporting systems. Mr. Chair, with your permission,
if you feel that I should carry on quarter one, or stop. I'm guided by you, Mr. Chair.
No, thank you very much. I think we should pause here. If there's going to be time for quarter one, we'll get to it. If not, I'm sure we'll make a plan. Thank you very much. Colleagues, we're going to now debate the both inputs. Let me allow me just to say that from your input, unlike previous reports, the first one there is that the annual report doesn't highlight disciplinary matters of cases against staff. I assume it's based on the fact that that's being dealt or finalized by DCS. If not, you can clarify that. I don't see that there. That is the disciplinary matters with regard to your own staff.
Sorry? Disciplinary?
Yes, disciplinary matters. Okay. I don't see that at the moment. Then, of course, you covered it already, but we do note the significantly improved number of inspections conducted as opposed to the previous years. Well done there. This maybe when we explain the one I wanted to cover here is the discrepancy in the number of unnatural deaths reported. In your slide there, have you checked that against, because I understand DCS also does report on it. Is there a discrepancy? It seems there is. You may want to check the figures there. Yours is 103, on page 47, as you pointed out to us. And Correctional Services speaks about 58, although you engaged with them. But the point is just whether you have cross-checked that. On certain aspects, do you do that? I assume not, based on all the challenges you've raised earlier. But there's no reason why you shouldn't, for that matter. At the end of the day, annual reports, whether it's DCS, whether it's JICS, certain aspects within the confine of correction centers should be accurate in that regard. But let me, you can pause those questions when you respond later. I'm going to take the hands now of the members, Ms. Honorable Jelly, Moseko Jelly, then we have Honorable Malazi. Is Joanna up? No. Joanna's up, yes, then followed by Honorable Vaughan. Let's proceed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation, both by the judge and the CEO. But I would like to get clarity on two issues because you covered me on others. Let me start with this one, the last one that she has just mentioned, the CEO mentioned about the appointment. We appreciate the report and the explanation. But one would like the CEO to just give us the positions of those categories, yes. And then also, Chairperson, there's somewhere where I read where they're talking about the doctor. I think this one also we need to make a follow-up. The doctor that did not show up when he was called, when there was a, it shows in the report. I think that one also we need to follow up. Is it, the question maybe on that one might be, who's paid the doctors? Those doctors paid by the Department of Health and all that. Can we just get a clarity? And then another one, Chair, it is on the, I think we would propose, Chairperson, that if we can have a joint briefing session between JICS and DCS on these matters of reporting system, where we concentrate on that issue and deal with it once and for all. I think those are the issues that I would like to just get clarity on. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Have a good morning. You can proceed.
Thank you,
Chairperson, for this opportunity, and also to upload the department to be present, as we requested in the previous meeting, that whenever JICs come, it would be good for us that the department must come, and also the office of the ministry. They are here. Some of the frustration, they are listening themselves. So we appreciate that this is the commissioner and the office of the deputy minister. So my first clarity question was about the relationship from the presentation by the judge, about the relationship with the DCS. In the previous meeting, there was a tone of that there are DCS officials who are not cooperative to the GTS for interviews and everything. We just want to know whether is that matter solved or not, so that you must say it on their ears when they're here. And also, the other thing the judge said is about the extension of his contract, which is he is also not sure what is the meaning of this contract extension by the letter from the minister. So I think your contract must not be done out of common sense. It must be done in terms of the statute and the legislation. You have been appointed by the president, and we expect your contract to be extended by the president, not out of common sense. Because if something happened under your leadership now, you are open for litigation against these chicks. So we would like the ministry to report that as a committee, we are not very accepting and approving what the minister did, because the president is here. There is an office of president, so we must speedily assure the judge, because it's his prerogative to do so. So we mustn't act like we're a banana republic where everybody can do things out of common sense. We're not using common sense, we must use laws to appoint our judge, to extend the contract of the judge and given a new mandate by the president. We want the office of the ministry to note that. The judge said again about the mandatory and the reporting and the management information system, MIS. He said there is an impact of the neglect of the MIS by the DC. CS. How are they doing that? Can the judge explain more? What are you saying, judge, about this negligent by the DCS, so that we must know where as the parliament can we intervene? Yeah, the presentation by the CEO on his first slide after the emissions is about the organizational structure. You said it very loudly that you have been frustrated here by the department. But we would like the DCS maybe to opportune to us with the information. Why are they not supporting them in terms of filling the vacant post? They said they did everything. They're just waiting for the DCS to do their own part. So we'll be happy if we can get more explanation on that, what is the problem with the department. And on the presentation of the CEO about the employment equity, on the slide, there's no page here, but it's about the graph where you talk about black male, female, males, colored, and everything. That's like
So I wanted to know that we want to know about the percentages in terms of the management of JICs, about the geographically representative, not the entire. This is too general and vague. We can see whether women have been promoted, whether people with disability are there, whether youth have been considered. Can you explain much about the management on that graph? So you, on the report, there's no highlight of the disciplinary cases under the year under review 2018-2019. We just want to know whether there was any disciplinary cases reported during 2018-2019. And also about the underspending. During the year under review, you underspent by 4.9 million. So we just want to know the reason which contribute on that underspending. Because you are coming here, Jigs, most of the time, you said, no, we're not giving you money, the treasury is cutting, the department is cutting funds, and you end up underspending. We don't understand. That's why we want to know about the reason of underspending this about 5 million. When you are trying to tell us that you can't exercise your work because you have been underspent, you were telling us about even the budget cut in the operational budget. So they are cutting because you are underspending. So tell us what is this cause of this underspending. So the other thing is about the grievances, the four grievances reported in 2018-19. Only three were solved. We just want to know about the nature of these grievances and also this unsolved one. When is it going to be solved? Because it's for the year under review 2018-2019. Why is this one is not resolved and when will it be resolved? On your report about the expenses of the, there's no leases. We just want to know, you used, on the previous year, financial year, during the fifth parliament, you had the leases amount, budget, about leasing the building and the offices. But for this year under review 2018-2019, there is no such thing. But we just want to know, are you not leasing, are you owning your own buildings? Are you resolved in terms of leasing? So we also appreciate your improvement in terms of visiting our prisons from 81 to 122. At least you're going there to 50% with the same staff. So we think that if you can get more staff, you will be maybe able to reach up to 80 to 90%. That's what in fact we want all the prisons to be inspected so that we must know what is happening there. So we'll appreciate that your acceleration of visiting. We appreciate that. Go on like that. So the inspector has reported that a mandatory report from the DCS has decreased, especially on segregation, use of force, mechanical returns. So, what is being done to resolve such serious concern as you identified it? And also, we also appreciate the decrease of natural deaths. From our prison, we want to applaud the department what they are doing. However, we will appreciate the death to be reduced. As the CEO said, that we'll also need to engage the Portfolio Committee of Health in order to make our prison conducive in such a way that the
natural death will be reduced. And we know that most of these deaths is overcrowding, and as you said, that the prison, the DCSS department, they can't do anything because, as the judge said, that they don't invite the prisoners. They have been thrown there by our courts. So this year we appreciate the reduction of the natural death. The number of suicide that was occurred in the single cells. So we also want the department to look out on the screening of the inmates, those who are going to the single cells, also to check them whether they are suicidal or not before they are being sent to the single cells, because as you inspected, you showed us a big number of the people who have mental illness. 2,780 members you identified. And JICS reported one of, there is a difference in reporting between JICS and the department. So we just want to know these discrepancies. JICS reported the unnatural death 103 is on your page 47 of your report. While the department on the same year, they reported 58. On page 70 of your report, the department of annual report. JICS again reported 28 cases of suicide, page 48 of your annual report. While the department reported 35 cases, page 70 of your report, department. So we just want to know the clarity, which one is the right numbers here. It's like everybody's writing his numbers in his corner, and you come in parliament, we thought that we don't read. We read these things very much. When we come here, we come with everything in our head. So we see the differences. Same, yeah, people that are reporting about suicide, some they said it's 38, some they said it's 2. So which one is the wrong number? It's the right and the wrong number. And you're working together. Why don't you sit down first and share the reports and come here in parliament? Because remember, to mislead the parliament is a criminal offense. We'll open a case against you if you think we are playing here. Because you're being paid to do your work, but you come with different figures here to mislead us. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Advocate Mlauti, Mr. Won.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Acting Chair. I've largely been covered. However, there's two issues I want to maybe just also take up with JICS for the sake of enabling the committee to engage possibly later with DCS. The one being the lack of mandatory reporting, and we hear now that JICS says they've from their side now tried to implement a manual reporting system. However, I want to hear from JICS as to when they engage with the department regarding this issue, what is the reaction and the stance of the department, and why I'm asking this is the way I understand it is that this is to be linked with the issue this committee has also touched base with DCS on a number of occasions, and that's the lack of progress with the development of the integrated inmate management system. And it has an unsavory history, we all know, in the sense that it is an award tender that DCS stuck with, despite the fact that the chief procurement officer at National Treasury at the time advised against the finalization of the contract. And DCS, in their September engagement with this committee, said that very good progress with the development of the system is imminent. But on the other hand, there's information out there which says that this system, by its very nature, will never be rolled, be able to be rolled out throughout the country because of technical issues that there is specifically in the rural areas. So I want to know firstly whether JICS is getting reports on the mandatory reports they need or are entitled to, at least at the sites where there is the pilot project of the integrated inmate management system. So are there any sites and facilities from where they get reports in terms of this pilot project at all? And secondly, whether from the department side, there has been an indication as to whether there's light at the end of the tunnel. Is JICS expecting ever to get credible information from this system, from their side? Secondly, Chair, I want to touch, want to also get a sense from JICS as to how they see reaction from reports unfolding. So I mean, one gets a huge sense of frustration here today, and to a large extent, it's all operational in nature. But I want to go a step further and ask, ultimately, when reports are filed, is the reaction from the department and from the ministry as experienced by JICS of such a nature that they feel that ultimately their work is not in vain? So the way I see it, JICS has a role to play in making correctional services a better institution. Obviously with a skewed view of ensuring that inmates are treated in a humane manner, their basic rights are protected and adhered to. But even given that, the reason why we have JICS in this country, even in its current problematic format, is to ensure that correctional services operates in an optimal manner. So the question ultimately is, do you feel that your reports and the reaction to your report by the department and the executive do bring positive changes? Thank you.
I think that's the question. We don't have another member here present. You can proceed. Thank you, Judge. The responses to is the CEO yourself?
Yes, I will. As I understood, the questions, some were not directed at us, but at the representatives of the department and ministry. And Chair, I hope that you would give them the opportunity. I will make a few remarks and pass the specific ones on to my colleagues. Starting, Chair, for me to respond on to the questions about the appointment, director, discipline of staff, etc., I would hold back a little bit because I need more clarity as to exactly what the questions are about, but depending on what my colleagues respond, I will come back. Discrepancies between reports on numbers, deaths, etc., other factual issues between the CEO, Mr. De Souza, next to him, and our colleagues, Professor Mslava, and I think they are mostly the people here who work with the, they would be able to respond to that, and I ask them to please be ready. As to the, I have nothing further to say about the future of an inspecting judge, but I don't think the core of it lies in question in terms like extension or appointment or whatever. When a contract comes to an end, you can either say you extend it or you can say you start a new contract or you appoint the same person or another person or whatever. So I don't think the crux lies in the terminology, but I, as I said earlier, I have nothing further to say to that. And as I understood the question, it was put to the ministry in any event. As to the question about the doctor, I will pass that on to Mr. D'Souza and Professor. I'm not sure who deals with it. A joint meeting, yes. I cannot stress enough how much we would like a regular contact with DTS. I've said this all along. And in spite of our concerns, the concerns of my staff when I was appointed 3.5 years ago, for a while it went very well. For a while it went very well. We have been, it has been difficult to get together recently. The protocol, as I've said, I support fully. I am on record in letters to the minister, to the national commissioner, which Mr. Seller would have here in his file or on his computer, middle July, after our meeting of early July, I invited the national commissioner to nominate people to sit with our people to work on a protocol. That is, we have not heard anything. But we are very happy for that. Perhaps I can slip in there, Chair. We're happy as we are to have both the Ministry and DCS here today. May I ask if one or more people of JICS would be welcome to attend when you see the department on the 17th? Because the same would apply in the other direction. If that is a yes, we will arrange for somebody to be here. Then the question by the honourable member from the EFF, I've answered the part on cooperation. He asked the ministry about the contract, the mandatory reporting. Where we are at the moment, I will leave to Mr. D'Souza and or the CEO and Professor Mashlava to answer. As far as employment equity is concerned, I actually at some time, a few months ago, asked the CEO to suspend our employment equity policy so that I can have a look at it. I was not completely satisfied with certain clauses in it. And if you want detail, I'll tell you why. But in any event, they revised it. And it is with me at the moment to give it a final glance. But as far as I'm concerned, our employment equity policy must reflect the national goals. We all know the realities of South Africa. And would not be in favor of anything reserving positions for white men or whatever like that. That might be technically possible, but as far as I'm concerned, not in the spirit of our democracy. I could add there that with regard to appointments, after the position of Director of Legal Services was advertised, there were interviews. The outcome of the interviews was to not appoint anybody, or not to appoint anybody. I'm sorry that I'm splitting my infinitive, but Mr. D'Souza is acting in that position, but I have specifically asked the CEO and our staff to advertise and to state that our preference would be for the appointment of a black woman. This might be controversial, but I would really like to see that and other senior positions that are not filled yet. I would like to see more representativity in terms of race and gender. Unfortunately, I can do little about the fact that I'm white. I'm not one of the white people who says on my inside I'm black. I think on my inside I'm a purple bloody mess like all of the rest of us. And perhaps one could consider with an inspecting judge to have a change of color. I don't know. The question on discipline, I am not quite sure what it means, whether you're simply asking about the absence of information, or do you have something specific in mind? On the general point, my colleagues will answer. If there is something more specific, I will come back. Mandatory reporting, Mr. Horn and others, from our side, the CEO, Mr. Mashlava, Mr. D'Souza will answer. The last one is the very serious question, what happens to your report? And to some extent, Chair, I don't know what to answer. Since day one when I was appointed, up to recently, whenever I speak to the media, whether it at a media event, radio, newspaper requirements, television right there under the glaring lights, I am asked, do they take you seriously? What happens after your report? And the question makes it difficult. In the beginning, when I tried to play around with a measure of arrogance, I said at a media event that we held at, I think, Polesworth, after the previous events in St. Albans and P, when the question came, I said, well, try me. That kind of remark I got from older judges who like to sound arrogant in court. But the ones I'm thinking of were not white old judges. They were, I'm thinking of somebody like Judge Krichler, and who is white, of course, and Judge Ismail Mohammed. So the strategy we decided on together with the minister and deputy minister at the time was that if we do not get a response, we will go to the media based on the principles of fairness and responsibility. I stated that very clearly. We do not want the minister or the national commissioner to be surprised by the judge saying on TV, this and this is the real reason why so-and-so died. We do not want that. Responsibility and fairness. And we have really tried to do that. Once or twice, this attitude, this approach worked. For example, I've mentioned in this committee more than once, sorry for doing it again, about 6 months into my appointment, I became aware of an incident that happened 18 months earlier, which is recorded on the TV, on the cameras, and which indicated prima facie the murder of an official the murder of an inmate by officials. That report had been somewhere for more than 18 months. We wrote to all the relevant parties that we want the report before the end of August that year. We did get a report which was highly unsatisfactory. We had a seminar at Helderstrom on violence. The then National Commissioner Modise said to the media, he set aside that investigation and they started a new one. So this is it, and the commissioner cooperated at that time. So that is an example where the media would, but of course we don't want to use that as a lever all the time. We don't want all the time to say to National Commissioner or Minister, if we don't hear from you by Friday 12, you'll see us on TV that evening. But we do need cooperation. On the ground level, Mr. D'Souza can help, but on ground level, as far as I know, when we write a report, when our inspectors write a report that goes to him on a specific centre, saying that the taps don't work or there's no hot water or whatever, that report goes first to the head of that centre, isn't it? Am I correct, Mr. D'Souza? And they get a chance to respond, and they can say to us, hey, you're wrong, factually, we don't have 10 showers, we have only 8. Or they can say, yes, we are aware that they did not work, we've repaired them in the meantime. On ground level, we are welcomed mostly, as far as I can see, by the heads of centers and the staff. Sometimes they welcome us to such an extent that I said that in Parliament before, that they complain more than the inmates complain about the state of the facility and the state of roofs and locks and rainwater coming through the roofs and so on. So on that level, in my experience, we have had a very good relationship, of course, with exceptions that some places people will try to avoid you, some people, etc. Higher up, quite frankly, I don't know what the answer is. We've had a very good response to some things. Never really a negative response. Never really a response like, we don't agree with you, but we're not going to do what you say. But very often, just silence. Or we will let you know later, which have been frustrating. Now, I would like to, Mr. D'Souza and Professor have been here much longer than the CEO and I and Ms. Cupido, and I would like them to add, honestly, without accusing anybody, what the atmosphere has been over a long period of time. That is all that I want to say. The others can answer, and if necessary, and I hope not, I will come back on specific issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the one question was on the categories or the levels. That's contained on page 67. It talks of top management level 15 to 16. Then senior management from 13 and goes down. So these are all the actual levels in terms of employment, of occupational classification, Mr. Chair, and these are contained in our report here. But what ties up with this area is the issue of discipline. During this reporting period, 2018, we had no formal disciplinary hearings, per se. However, we did have some grievances, and those grievances are contained on page 69, and it's a general question that have been asked also by other colleagues. On a previous occasion, there was a written submission that we submitted answers to those grievances, and one grievance that was still outstanding has been finalized during this performance period. We've also submitted a written submission to this, to the Secretariat, and I think they are in possession of this written submission. The leases will be covered by, and the finances issues will be covered by the finance manager. The mandatory reporting has decreased. That was one of the issues. And what has been done to address this? If you recall, I've indicated that sometime in February this year, we put in a manual reporting system, which was signed by the National Commissioner, which is issued a circular towards all officials, all heads of centres throughout the country, all 243 of them, and the regional commissioners and the area commissioners were put on terms in terms of reporting on the manual reporting system. But however, there seems to be some non-compliance still in those areas. I would ask Mr. D'Souza and the colleagues then to respond on the others. I think I'm covered.
Thank you, Chair and members. I will respond on a few questions. First of all, there are discrepancies every year on natural deaths that we report and that DCS reports. One of the largest challenges that we have is a category called unnatural other. So in this case is where an apparent inmate that has no previous history of medical illness suddenly dies. That death is always reported as unnatural. So what then happens is we record it as unnatural, but then we wait for the autopsy report to come in. So the autopsy report might say that it was a heart attack or a stroke or something like that, and then it is changed to natural. But we cannot change any of those deaths from unnatural to natural without us having that proof in our hand. And sometimes with DCS must still send us those reports. So when there's a delay in sending us that report, they might know that these inmates have died of natural causes and we don't know it yet because we haven't received the reports. So that is the one. And then the question, I think that we did an investigation on a death where the doctor did not show up or did not show up for a while, if I can remember correctly. In that case, DCS employs the doctor. And one of our recommendations was that DCS should review their relationship with that doctor and maybe appoint somebody else who actually wants to do the work, because it's unacceptable for us as well. But unfortunately, we cannot do anything because the relationship is not between us and the doctor, but between DCS and the doctor. I think the judge answered that one. I think I'm going to, we can ask Professor Mushlaba to just talk about the IT system on mandatory reporting, because he is actually the head of that department. I think that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and the members, and to the questions. Just to add to what Mr. D'Souza was saying with regards to the discrepancies, it is in fact indeed correct. We do go through a process, as the Chair was asking, if we go through a process of checking the depths with DCS. We do go through that process of checking, but you find that sometimes when we conclude our processes, the annual reports have already been done. As we have said, sometimes we'll wait, they're saying that death occurred as an unnatural other. So that process usually takes a bit of time. But I think going forward, we'll try and improve that process whereby we try and make sure that when we come the next time, that the numbers do match. Just going to the MIS reporting system, and to also what Member Horn was asking, how is the process of the EMS, that reporting system? We are currently in the phase where we're trying to test the new system with the ones that they are trying to develop for chicks. The last time we looked at the amendments was 30th of September, last week. There is a lot of challenges with the system, and we have highlighted those issues to DCS to try and fix, especially with some of the deaths or some of the information of the inmates where when you're trying to report, you can't pick it up on the, it can't pick the maybe the inmate, it can pick up the inmate, but it can't pick up the information. And then in some places, I think it's, they'll say it's not talking to each other. The systems are not talking to each other yet. So, but we are in that phase where we are busy trying to check how best the system is going to work. And I think probably by October, somewhere in the next 2 weeks, we might try and meet with the officials that are dealing with the MIS to say, you know what, let's try and see what other issues we can put so that it starts operating fully. But we are in that process of checking the MIS. It's, even though it's taking time, we'll have loved for the system to be operational, but the testing phase is a bit of a challenge to everyone. Also, given the fact that some of the officials that are at DCS is quite new officials, so they didn't have much of an idea of what the mandatory reporting entailed. I hope I've answered those questions. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Just a short little note, even though it wasn't one of the questions, but I think it's very important that the committee needs to understand that when it comes to, because a lot has been said about working together with the correctional services when it comes to, for example, the reporting and media releases, etc. When it comes to communications and the public that has the right to know, as an oversight body, I think it's important that people must understand that, especially doing oversight, we don't just inform the public about what is happening in facilities as well, but we also try and create awareness, which is part of our mandate as a body that uses the Constitution to follow its processes. The public needs to be informed about why we do what we do. And it, in that way, if we create more awareness in the public eye, we are trying to provide the opportunity for our inmates to be brought back into society, to be accepted back into society. And if we provide those opportunities, then the consequence of that would be that you would have lesser people in prison. Because those people that are sitting in prison that are not being allowed back into society are not being allowed back because they don't want, the communities don't want them back into society. So there's a dual role that we're trying to portray when we're talking to the media, when we are highlighting these various things. And our challenge at this stage is, because we do not have a website where we can provide the public with information, where we can create communication platforms, where we can provide information as to how they can access our services, it puts us on the back burner. So it may look at times like we are just trying to attack DCS, or we're just trying to cause problems for DCS. I want the committee to know that that is not the case. If we had more tools, if we had the website, if we had the social media, then I think the committee and the public and even DCS would be able to see that what we're trying to do is assist and not just highlight what is wrong with DCS. Thank you.
Sorry, Chair, can I just make one final comment? I forgot to speak about the reaction that the judge asked. From when we do an investigation or we do an inspection, sometimes the cooperation that we receive from DCS is very good. They would fix stuff that we ask, and they would give us reports and whatnot. But it depends on the type of investigation that we do. As soon as we ask maybe for disciplinary action to be taken against an official, then everything slows down and the cooperation starts to become less. But when it's a case like, can you please fix the bathroom, okay, then we are on the same level. I think I just wanted to say that.
Okay. Now, this is just a follow-up question. I think I understand what... Okay. I understand exactly what you are saying. These are some of the things that we have picked up on the Auditor General. So, but we'll make a follow-up on those ones, because it can be correct that our report is, you know, in fact, the response that you get when you ask for information, or it is kind of biased. You'll get this one and the other one you won't get. We want you to get everything that you will make your work to be easy. But also, I just want to make a follow-up on this one, Chair, on the employment equity. I don't think that the CEO maybe missed a question how we ask, because it also, I think Mr. Mlaudzi also asked it. You are giving us here the numbers that you have black male 25, black female 37. We appreciate all those numbers and then other numbers, but we want you to give us the insight as to the levels, at what level are all these people. It might not, maybe, you know, if you feel that maybe you won't be presented now, but we want those numbers, because we want to make sure that at least you adhere to this employment equity. We are not interested if maybe you put white person or black person or what, but we want to make sure that you comply with employment equity. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My follow-up question is the CEO. I asked about the grievances. Yeah, we said the report is only telling us about the four grievances which was reported under the year, during the year under review. So the question critical what we want to know is the nature, the actual nature of those grievances. What are those grievances? Can you explain one by one those grievances? And these unsolved grievances also, is this nature and when are you going to solve it? Lastly, it's about the staff complement, as Honorable Maseko was saying. Yeah. This question which we ask about you to articulate, because there was a petition by your staff members then. The petition about the staff members that you have segregation there, especially for the black African. You don't give them post, the higher post, strictly for other race. That's why we're asking this question. So can you tell us about, did you solve that petition or not? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, you can proceed. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe the issue of the levels and the categories of the employment classifications is on page 67 of our report, and you'd find a senior manager level 13 and 14. There is one African male and one Indian male, which includes me, which is a total of two. Then the next level, which is the level 11 to level 12, there's three African males, one colored male, one Indian male, two white males, one colored female, eight in total. It's on page 67. This is our equity breakdown. You will find it on page 67 of our annual report. It's on there. Coming again to the response, page 67 of our annual report. Coming to the grievances, which was reported in our annual report, I've indicated. It's contained on page 69 of our annual report. Page 69, grievances registered for the period on the review. There were three of them. This was a question asked previously by this portfolio. We've submitted a written submission to the Secretariat. The written submission is with the Secretariat on all those matters. The one that was still outstanding has been finalized in this performance cycle, which is the 2019-2020 performance. All these grievances have been resolved, and they are with the Secretariat. We've responded in writing to those responses. It was a question asked by the Honourable Member himself that asked the question. The staff petition, I would hand over to the inspecting judge to respond. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks. Yes. Thank you, Judge.
Yes, Chair, maybe the CEO can respond again, but that's why I asked for more clarity. When you talk about grievances, etc., do you know about, or are you asking about the petition? JICS has about just under 400 people, and permanent people, 180 or whatever, and then the ICCVs of about
400.
So we are just over or just under 400?
Just under.
Right. Last year, during 2018, a group of people, staff members in the Cape Town office, wrote quite widely, but especially to the Public Service Commission, about certain, they made certain allegations. From what I can remember, the allegations included things like Mr. Mosala Selu lost three laptops and so on. Mr. Selu has never lost a laptop that I know of in my life. The Public Service Commission decided not that there was not enough merit to investigate. Then in April this year, while I was out of the country, in fact visiting a prison in Trinidad and Tobago and meeting with their inspector, I became aware of a document which was called a petition, allegedly signed by 25 staff members out of our, like I said, about 400, 18 of them in the Cape Town office, a few in Durban,
and I think two in East London. Nobody from the Howard Bloemfontein office, nobody from the Centurion office of the North, nobody from head office. To make a long story short, the petition was quite wide-ranging. But in fact, it actually asked the National Commissioner to investigate the judge and the CEO and many others for, amongst other things, corruption and self-enrichment. The logical thing was to then deal with it, and in consultation with the previous ministry, we decided to follow the Act. The Correctional Services Act says nothing that the National Commissioner can investigate the judge, and the National Commissioner also clearly indicated to me that he has no desire to investigate anything, either the judge or the staff. But what we did in terms of Section 88A, around 6 or so, I'm not sure, it says that the inspecting judge must refer complaints about the CEO to the National Commissioner. Now, the complaints about several staff members also basically amount to a complaint about the CEO, seeing that he controls. It implicated many people. It implicated Mr. Chalisa, etc. It raised issues about travel and all of that. What we then did is I spoke to the National Commissioner. I did refer it to him and later spoke to him, and we agreed that I would refer it to the Public Service Commission because they indicated that they would be willing to investigate. I did refer it to the Public Service Commission. Advocate Richard Cizani, the chair, was in contact with me, and what we asked them to investigate with the agreement of the National Commissioner is each and every allegation in the petition, together with proof, because the petitioners, or at least those who drafted, stated that they have considerable written documentary evidence that they could make available. I asked that every allegation of corruption and self-enrichment, maladministration, etc., should be investigated. However, I also asked to investigate the origins of the petition because there is a certain history, perhaps specifically in Cape Town. It was not clear whether the unions were involved or not. On one level, the unions, I think in communication with Mr. Misser, I'm not sure, denied that they knew anything about it, but the union rep was apparently central. So at this stage, the Public Service Commission are investigating all of it. To the best of my knowledge, they asked all the petitioners to send them, to make written affidavits and to state what their concerns were and on what it is based. That is, as far as I know, that investigation is. What I could tell you in the meantime, but the public and I will not mention any names, what the Public Service Commission will investigate it. It's actually difficult to say it, but the impression that I have gained from people who signed and who did not sign, who came to me, was that some of them signed a document different from the one that was distributed. But later it was alleged that the very person who told me that is the one who drafted the document in the first place. And I was told by several people that they did not see the document when they signed. They were expected to sign a paper, in my own words, that is now how I interpret it, is all like signing up for the end of the year Christmas party or for a team building, whatever. And in one case specifically, Chair, I feel very aggrieved should this be correct, but this is for the Public Service Commission to investigate. The one person who signed is an ex-inmate who served many years in prison for bank robbery or something like that, who has been a completely rehabilitated person, who works officially or did work for us as a cleaner or messenger, is now doing a very good job by often being at the reception desk, answering the phone. Every time comes to me to hug, embrace greetings, to tell me how much he appreciates that he can work for Jix, how his life is different. Who, when my wife and daughter came to the office to pick me up, he shared his experiences with him. Now that person tells me that he was told to put his signature on a piece of paper, but he did not know anything about a petition. If that is true, it is an extremely blatant, vulgar, abusive, unfair exploitation of a person with less education than others may have. Whether that is true,
I don't know. That is why, and I'm not going to investigate it any further. Some people came to me. I have asked our staff not to create any impression of putting pressure on people or victimizing people. In my view, a whistleblower, we see it on the news, a whistleblower must be protected. I'm not saying like President Trump, just the whistleblowers I like. Whistleblowers must be protected. But of course, when the opportunity is there, the whistleblowers must be able to say and to produce the evidence on which they founded their complaint. And that is with the Public Service Commission. I can't remember now exactly when they promised a response, but they are busy with the investigation. I'm out of it. And the commissioner, as I said, agreed that we pass it on to them. So what is actually happening there is, on behalf of the commissioner, with his agreement and on behalf of myself, we pass it on to the commissioner.
And when we get that report, we will see what it says. Please be assured that I take all complaints very seriously. Most of the people then who came to me said, oh, they didn't even realize, even the person who was alleged to be the drafter of the document, but I really don't know whether the allegation is true, tells me that the judge was not implicated in the original document. I personally don't think the judge is really implicated, but formally it is the case. And therefore, we're investigating the whole issue, and we will watch the space. We will let you know as soon as we have anything more to let you know. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge. We have just a few points that just need to be concluded before we close, and that is the process here. Unfortunately, I've just discovered it's not recorded, just for your question when we started, I realize it's not recorded. We will have minutes of the meeting. On the 17th, he says this year, so Jix is welcome to send an observer to the meeting. There's no problem to that effect, if the budget allows. Okay. I don't think it would be appropriate for any of the ministry or the department to respond at this stage. There is a proper arranged meeting to that effect. I'm sure they've noted the issues raised, and we will engage in another day, on the 17th, particularly thereafter, if that's okay with all of you. Then lastly, before we end, I want to say to the CEO and Judge, when you started to present, you made a remark about obviously in frustration, I'm sure, about the delay in appointments of staff. And you said you're even considering going to litigate to ensure that the posts are full. Now, I think, Judge, there must be a special effort to exhaust the matter of that kind of nature. We don't go to court for that, you know. We exhaust all avenues, as you would know, notwithstanding the frustration that we are from a distance and you're right in there in the loop. I'm sure Judge will use your influence to at least get the communication. If not, please do communicate with the chair or a teacher of the committee. And we will try to. The ministry is here, as well as the commission is represented here. I'm sure they noticed that particular matter. Also, just the opinion, I'm sure I'm speaking for all the members of this committee on this point. I already alluded to the communication is a very complex and sensitive subject matter in all organizations of government, as well as independent institutions for that matter. We can learn from others and best practices that they are. I mean, there's a number to follow. In the family chain of the civil and criminal justice system, as you know. And all the entities in particular that report here to this committee have communication offices. And there's a harmony between the different messaging. I do understand they are maybe more executive entities, unlike the OCJ, NPA, and yourselves. But even then, there's full cooperation. But we will engage on that matter with the relevant parties at the right time.
Chair, but I need to ask a question and respond.
You can do that.
Sorry, I did not hear you in the beginning correctly. You said these proceedings are not recorded.
Yeah.
But you said, did you say that I said I was going to go to court on an appointment?
No. The CEO.
Yes. Now, can I just respond to that and be open about it? I have no desire or intention to go to court, either as the IJ or to drag Jigs to court or whatever. But let us talk openly about what is going on there. The two posts were advertised, that of Director Support Services, Director Legal Services. The CEO, together with others, constituted an appointment, a committee to interview. People applied, a shortlist was drafted. I had nothing to do with any of that. The committee met. CEO was not present. I was not present. It was chaired by a person from the Department of Justice, who I think is the acting master of the Supreme Court, I'm not quite sure. With regard to the Director Legal Services, the report back was so negative that the CEO decided to rather re-advertise the post, and that is where I asked that they specifically included preference for a black woman. Let's go just back to the Correctional Services Act. Says that appointments are done by the CEO. There are other clauses outside chapters 9 and 10 saying that the ministry must be consulted. But that relates to DCS officials, not JICS officials. In the beginning, there was uncertainty about this, but it seems to me that there is agreement on this. With regard to the Director Legal Services, the committee gave the CEO names. People, I think three, were sent for the whatever the tests are called. The test results came back. I will not mention names. the committee recommended as first choice candidate A. The chair of the committee noted concerns about the competency of candidate A based on the test results. The CEO therefore wrote a memo and preferred candidate B. I was not involved in the process, but I wrote on a memo that in view of what he said, namely the remarks by the chair, I would support his recommendation. The CEO sent it to the then ministry, and I'm not quite sure why, because the act does not require consultation with the ministry, but I assume it was for the purposes of courtesy, I don't know. Then by the previous minister as well as the, I'm not sure about the new ministry, but at least in a meeting, in writing, questioned the CEO's preference for candidate B. The head of HR at DCS, Mr. Mashibini, approached me at the farewell event for the previous minister and indicated to me that the appointment is wrong and that they would not activate it on the Paracel system. I immediately told the CEO and wrote, I think, and everybody else that I, as far as I'm concerned, we suspend that decision until we have full documentation. However, the CEO had issued a letter of appointment to candidate B. I was not involved in that, but he is in possession of a letter of appointment. Now, to fast forward a little bit, at some point I received a letter from the ministry with a letter from the national commissioner attached to it, where the national commissioner says to the minister, I'm not sure about the exact wording, but instruct the judge to appoint candidate A. And then the minister wrote, I request you to appoint candidate A and rely on your cooperation. My response was to all, I am not able to appoint anybody. According to the Act, the judge does not do appointments. So regardless now of the implications for independence, the judge receives instructions to do something which he is legally not entitled to do. However, I still asked for all documents about policies, etc., because my position, quite simply, Chair, is that it seems clear the CEO appoints. That's number one. But number two is very important. Obviously, the CEO must follow all the correct procedures in terms of law, policies, etc. And if there is anything that the CEO did wrong in that process, people must say it and show it, and the consequences must be dealt with. I will not allow the CEO, as if I have anything to do with it at all, and I will not support the CEO to push forward with any illegal or irregular process. However, since then, Commissioner and I met. I proposed to him that both he and I stay out of it, that Mr. Mashibini and CEO meet, and Commissioner proposed that we have somebody from DPSA involved. I agreed. Without them meeting, Mr. Mashibini requested an opinion from DPSA. The opinion was, if I remember correctly, that the appointment of candidate B is in order and must be implemented. That is an opinion from the public service, what's the department, public administration, requested by DCS. Then Mr. Messer asked for an opinion, an independent or legal opinion, and in two or three opinions, an advocate who seems to be an expert on on labor law said the same thing. That advocate has been advising that they must now write to the unsuccessful candidates, the appointment must be implemented, and the further alternatives would include the what you mentioned now, court cases, etc. From the side of DCS, Mr. Mashibini in particular told the CEO and wrote, and we have it, that they are first going to ask for an opinion from senior counsel. When was that first, that we heard it first?
20 August.
20 August, they indicated. I think then the CEO asked him, can we please have the opinion before the end of August? We do not have that opinion. In fact, from according to the CEO, the state attorney has not on record any request from them for an opinion. So this is one of the examples. We will not implement your appointment. We will not activate PowerSell. We will wait for a legal opinion. We have been waiting since around, 20 August? And there is no indication that there even is a legal opinion. To the contrary. So, again, I'm staying out of it, but that is where we are with that matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge. I think we have come, as we already said, we will engage on this particular matter. I don't think it's for us to express ourselves on this matter, the conflict of facts. But we do want to caution that I notice opinions and stuff, that's public money that you're spending on a process that's well embedded in the public service. So I don't know where opinions comes in at all, both from JICS and GCS. But as I said, we will engage on that. Ours is to avoid any wasteful expenditure to that effect. But thank you very much for the presentations. We have noted the concerns. We have recorded them and will channel them accordingly. Thank you very much. I think there's a light lunch outside. Thanks.